Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
92.9 Podcasts, powered by Action 24/7, Tennessee's only local legal sportsbook. Bet now at Action247.com. Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
I don't know what I should like to go. Oh, I think Arkansas was nice. It's all I know. Stayed at home, work for the family.
Today's special guest host, Jeffrey Wright.
Each and every day here on the Jeff Calkins Show, we welcome Chris Harrington to the program. Let's fire it up.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies and beyond every weekday around 10 a.m.
Chris, what are we listening to?
That's Arkansas is Nice by my fellow Arkansan / Memphian, Mark Edgar Stewart. I am spending the weekend in the northwestern part of the state where I still am, so that's in reference to that.
Is there a buzz in Northwest Arkansas? I would imagine with their big weekend that it's feeling pretty good right there for all the Arkansans in Northwest Arkansas.
Yeah, I have an uncle who was actually at the game, and I was in Bentonville the night of that game, which is like half an hour away. But I didn't realize he was here until I saw it on his Instagram the next day, and he was already leaving to go back to Texas. So, but I had family in the stadium for that game.
Yeah, you're talking to my part of the world there. My dad spent most of his career calling on Walmart, and then my first job out of college was calling on Walmart, so I'm quite familiar with the Northwest Arkansas. All right, let's get to at least one of the more interesting aspects of what we saw at the end of last week, because this trade broke after we had done the show on Friday. The Los Angeles Lakers traded Marc Gasol, a 2024 pick and cash, which has now been reported to be $250,000, to Memphis on Friday. The Grizzlies plan to work on a waiver and release to allow Gasol to remain with Spain and his family. The Lakers will save approximately $10 million in salary and luxury tax and acquire the rights to Wang Zeeland. The Lakers have 13 guaranteed contracts before the start of training camp. I made the joke on Twitter when you saw the news that the Lakers were trading Marc Gasol to the Grizzlies. It was like when you hear the opening drum kick of Hella Good and you think that it's Billie Jean, and then you realize it's No Doubt's Hella Good, and it's just a big disappointment. Right. But overall, in totality, what does this whole move mean? Because now we've learned that Marc Gasol likely is going to end up playing for a Division II team in Spain, in which I believe he owns the team. Obviously, his NBA playing days, it appear, are over. But what did you make of the move in totality?
Yeah, I'll start with the small stuff and just sweep that out of the way. The pick, I reported this. As far as I know, I may be the only one who has, but the pick from 2024 is the Lakers' own pick, and it's unprotected. So you got that. That's the main reason. The symmetry is nice, I guess. We'll get into that. But, I mean, the Grizzlies basically did the deal just to get a second-round pick. And it's funny that the rights to Wang Zeeland or whatever, who most people probably did not know was you know, those rights were property of the Grizzlies. It's funny that, like, that was used in a trade. It's sort of like all the pieces matter. Like, every little thing that you have in your cupboard potentially could be currency to be used. And sure enough, however many years later, they use the rights to this dude who will never play in the NBA to facilitate a trade and get a pick. But obviously what's meaningful here, I mean, that's probably what's meaningful from a basketball perspective, but what's actually meaningful from a larger perspective is the Marc Gasol kind of stuff. And I have sort of, I don't know, I have sort of mixed feelings about it, I guess. I mean, the instant reaction was, oh, it's great, Marc Gasol will retire a Grizzly. Well, I mean, I think, you know, if we want to think that way, that we can, but I don't think that's technically true. Like, I don't think if you don't play a game with the team, like when Marc Gasol's career is over and it shows, like, you know, his career, you know, where, whoa, sorry, we're on the interstate, a truck just tried to run us over.
Are you on 40?
Yeah, I'm
God,
not driving.
That's the worst.
My wife is driving.
Oh, that's the worst.
So, you know, I think when you look back, you know, assuming he does not play again in the NBA, when you look back at his career, it's not going to show the Grizzlies at the last stop because he didn't play here. But there is a nice symmetry to sort of his filtering his way through the Grizzlies on the way back out. And so, you know, I think that's kind of nice. But on the other hand, we don't get the return game.
Yeah.
You know, we don't get the Memphis in front of basically no fans, but we're not going to get the return game. And he is not, as far as I can know, he is not, unless I missed something over the weekend, he has not announced a retirement from the NBA. And so there has been some speculation that maybe late in the season he comes back and signs with some contender where he will have a role. We'll see. I'm guessing he's done with the NBA. And I also think whenever he officially retires, the Grizzlies will announce that they will retire his number as well. And I'm guessing some people on my Twitter feed were talking about, let's do that this season. That's not going to happen. But I would be surprised me if we got that next season.
If his NBA career is over, now that I can't think of anyone that has better context of his entire career than you. What do you make of his NBA career?
You know, he got a little bit of a late start relative to the times, right? He was like 23, I think, when he came over. He had already been the MVP in the Spanish league before he came to the NBA. And so he's played deep into his career, but he didn't get, like, the super early start. And he was never a guy, other than, like, a couple years there, he was never a guy who was a big scorer. And so he doesn't have, like, and for a long stretch, he wasn't, once Zebo got there, didn't put up great rebounding numbers either, really. So he's not a numbers guy. Like, his career numbers are nothing that great. They are relative to the Grizzlies, but not to the NBA.
Sure.
But he's a guy who was a multiple All-Star, was, I believe, a multiple All-NBA. He made a first-team All-NBA. I think he also made a third. Won a Defensive Player of the Year. And so that's a really strong resume. Is that like a Hall of Fame NBA resume? No. But given that, like, the Basketball Hall of Fame is not an NBA Hall of Fame, and you factor in his international play, you know, I don't think his case is as strong as Pau Gasol's is. His brothers will be. And I don't know if he'll ever make the Hall of Fame, but I think he certainly had a great NBA career. He is the only Memphis Grizzly to ever be first-team All-NBA.
Does anyone else have three All-Star appearances? So if you go through his whole career, three All-Star appearances, 2012, 15, and 17, All-NBA.
Did he make three? I forgot about that.
Yeah.
You mean three All-Star teams. Okay.
Remember, he was kind of a late. Remember, he was kind of a late add on that 2017 All-Star game.
Okay. Yeah, so then Powell and Zach Randolph had two.
Correct.
And no one else even has one for the Grizzlies other than that. Conley got his afterward. You know, obviously we all think John Morant's going to get on that list in the very near future. But that's it right now.
And then All-NBA first team in 2015, as you mentioned, the only Grizzly to ever do that. And actually, it was all second team in 2013, the same year that he won Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, he goes down, right, as the most decorated Grizzly.
Oh, I think, you know, I think from when you're ranking all-time Grizzlies, like, to me, it's a Zach Randolph versus Marc Gasol question, ultimately. And it's sort of like a peak value, career value thing.
Sure.
When the Grizzlies were at their very best as a team, it was when Zach Randolph was their best player. But the best career, objectively speaking, the best career in a Grizzlies uniform was Marc Gasol.
How difficult is it to compare his career in a Grizzlies uniform to Powell? Because on one hand, you know, Marc has the accolades, but Powell, I mean, who was the next best player on those teams? I mean, Marc was surrounded by much better players. How do you kind of weigh the performance
of
each?
Right? like if he was the same player putting up the same numbers on a bad team, he probably doesn't make that many All-Star games, if any at all, right?
Yes.
And so I think that's absolutely part of it. And that's why, to me, you know, I talk about the peak versus career thing. The peak question, like, Powell gets into that too, right?
Sure.
The teams weren't good enough. And I was making that case at the time. Powell Gasol at his very best was ridiculously good and was underrated even in Memphis because partly of aesthetic reasons, because he was more of a finesse player. And then partly just because the team wasn't good. And it's true he was not a guy who could put a team on his back. He could put a team on his back and get them to the playoffs.
Yeah.
But he couldn't do anything when he got there by himself.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that of course is the beginning. That was when my parents got season tickets for us. And, you know, I would find myself, I knew Powell was always a source of frustration, but I'd be there in person. I'm like, this guy's incredible. Like, I don't understand. I don't understand the hatred for him. But, like, in the end, I think it's because so many of those teams come up short and you just want to blame the best player. And I don't know. It's always fascinating to me in that I think in person there's a much – like, when you are in person with both Mark and Powell, there's a deeper appreciation for them than when you just kind of watch them. And, you know, what do you make of? Because there's so many people that would get just so frustrated with Mark. Do you think it's simply because points and rebounds? Like, is it really what that would boil down to?
Yeah, no, I think that has a lot to do with it. He was still – Mark came into a league that was still – a little bit more old school in terms of, like, you know, you're 7, I can post up. And I don't think people had internalized really to the degree to which that actually was not great offense. Like, it would be like, you know, it'd be impressive to see the big man on the block, I guess, but the team was actually better. I made this case at the time, but the team's offense was when he was shooting open mid-range jumpers and passing the ball, right?
Yeah.
And sort of and creating those lanes and whatever. But that's still sort of individual. The individual game numbers and the individual sort of forcefulness was still something that people tended to focus on. I think they still do to some degree, but I think even the casual fan has gotten a little smarter about that over the years. But with Gasol, it was, you know, it was still like game averages, right?
Yeah.
Where's your 20 points? Where's your 10 rebounds? And so much of what was best about him was frankly more subtle than that. It was team defense. It was passing. It was his ability to be the hub of an offense, you know, from the elbow and to run an offense basically around him. He was sort of the precursor to Nikola Jokic in a way. Jokic is taking it to a whole totally different level. But you know, Gasol, you could run your offense through Marc Gasol as a high post center, which is not, you know, something that is all that common, but that's something you could do with him. And his impacts were just a lot more subtle than that. And what his impacts were not about his individual scoring and individual rebounding.
What do you make of the Lakers' decision to move on from him? I think probably the writing was on the wall, and then I think the writing was definitely on the wall when we found out that David Fizdale was going to be on the Lakers' bench as an assistant.
Yeah,
I think you could do the math on that one. Well, Mark's officially gone, but I don't know. Like, when I watched them play with DeAndre Jordan, I just didn't think they were that good.
Yeah, no, I mean, the Fizdale thing's funny. I sort of doubt that that's an actual reason, but, I mean, who knows? But because I think the Lakers undervalued Marc Gasol last season.
Yeah.
Remember when they brought in Andre Drummond? And there's something about the Lakers, and I don't know whether this is a LeBron influence thing or this is a Bus family thing or what it is, or just it just happens to you when you get to L.A. because of, you know, the glitz and the entitlement. But there's just a real attraction to name brand players, you know, instead of, like, players who just work on the floor. And so, like, they're just collecting all these guys who, like, would have made up an All-Star team 7 years ago, right?
Yeah.
You know, it was Andre Drummond last year, now it's DeAndre Jordan, and it's Carmelo Anthony, and, you know, Rondo back, and all of this.
It's the 2012 Olympic team. Remember, we did the math. It's like three-quarters of that team.
And so, you know, we'll see. I mean, for me, from a Lakers standpoint, like, I'm more impressed by, like, the Malik Monk non-additions than the, like, All-Stars from 8 years ago additions in terms of their actual play. But I think they have under – I mean, Gasol is not what he once was at all. He just basically won't shoot anymore.
Yeah.
But he is still a really good post defender. And if I would rather have him on my team than DeAndre Jordan, because if I get into a playoff series against Denver, like, I can unwrap Gasol and have him guard Nikola Jokic. You know, what if you get to NBA finals and, like, you know, Joel Embiid's on the other side of the floor? Whereas I don't think if DeAndre Jordan could still help you all that much, he'd still be in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And so, I don't really like that decision from a Lakers standpoint, but whatever. Lakers are going to Laker.
No, I think we can assume that that was a GM LeBron decision. If
right.
you know, we're kind of talking about, you know, peak value versus career value. In your mind, if you're power ranking Memphis Grizzlies, where does Mark's career end up?
Oh, I think he's one of the, he's top two, depending on how you slice it. I think the top tier, all things considered, for the Grizzlies historically is Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol. I know Mike Conley's the leading scorer in franchise history, but I think all things considered, it's Randolph and Marc Gasol. That's your top tier, and I think Mike Conley and Pau Gasol are the second tier.
Now that we've seen that the Grizzlies have pulled off two more trades, are we getting any more clarity in your mind of the roster moves that they're going to do? Because, we're coming up now on basically 2 weeks kind of before they have to kind of decide on training camp. Is the path getting clearer to what the roster is going to look like in your mind?
Nothing's really changed that much since last we talked about it. I do think my prediction for you today is they're going to cut Daniel Oturu this week.
Okay.
I'm not reporting that.
But
I don't know that as a factual matter. But remember, that Celtics trade is not actually processed. The one,
yep.
Because it couldn't process until a certain date, and that date is later this week. I think they're going to cut Daniel Oturu as part of processing that Boston trade. So I think Oturu will be out this week. Gasol obviously is just passing through, not coming in. And so that'll get you down to, I believe, four players, two spots, which would be Jarrett Culver, Sam Merrill, the two guys from Boston, Chris Dunn and Carson Edwards.
Yeah.
And so I think you're going to see Oturu out this week before training camp. Culver is going to be on the roster, you know, one way or another, more than likely. And so to me, the question is among Merrill, Dunn, and Edwards, three guys, one spot, are they going to bring all three into training camp, or are they going to make a decision on at least one of them ahead of camp? It wouldn't surprise me if they cut Edwards before camp. And I assume they're looking around for trades for Chris Dunn if they can do something productive with his contract. But I'm not assuming that's going to happen at all.
I mean, doesn't the base position have to be you assume that they're looking for trades? Because I'm now convinced that I'm convinced this team's addicted to trade mode on NBA 2K.
I'm pretty sure Zach Kleiman did like three trades while he was on vacation.
Yes.
Well, like out of the country on vacation, he was doing trades. And so I think he may be back in town now, so maybe he'll just, you know, the wheel start spinning even more. Who knows?
Yeah, now that he's on the same, like, time, now that he's, like, on a better time difference than everyone, he can really roll up the sleeves and get after it. In general, though, isn't it appropriate that that's kind of how they view how to build a roster? Because, like, at a certain point, like, it does feel like they do – I don't think you can really argue that they do maximize whatever contracts they own. They do maximize it. And if you're a small market team, isn't that appropriate?
Yeah, no, I think you should be. I think, you know, if you run an NBA team, and especially in a small market, but really anywhere, you should be sweating the small stuff and trying to, you know, work every little edge you have and work, you know, fill in, color in every corner, basically.
Yeah.
I do think that's appropriate. I do think it matters. I don't think it matters as much as the big stuff, right?
Sure.
And so you can eke out every little, like, second-round pick and $250,000 cash and, like, whatever. You can eke all of it out. But if you miss on Zaire Williams, like, that's what's going to matter most. And so I think, you know, it shouldn't distract us from the big stuff, which is what matters most. But you want people sweating the small stuff. And I do think there was a recent past with this franchise where they didn't fully sweat the small stuff, and they didn't run everything out across the finish line, right? And I think it is good that they are doing that now and doing that smartly, and they're more careful about, you know, playing everything out to its conclusion. I think they are less likely to get in a position where, like, you know, you traded a first round pick for Jeff Green and protections are such that, oh no, you're worried, are you going to end up losing a really good pick? Like, that's the kind of detail work I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I think they do the detail work, but still it's a matter of getting the big stuff right, right? And they miss on Justice Winslow, and we'll see where it goes on Zaire Williams.
Kind of big picture, in 5 years, and I understand the draft with Jaren is not technically accredited to you know, this front office. But
what Zach Kleiman was in the front office, right. But he was at a lower. He was an assistant GM when that draft happened.
What do you think is more significant to the front office's success? Zaire Williams hitting or Jaren Jackson starting to look like what he could have been in year two?
Jaren all the way. Jaren's the tipping point player. You assume Ja is going to be an all-star level point guard.
Yeah.
Jaren is the tipping point. If Jaren becomes an all-star level player,
yeah,
like it'll be a bummer to miss on Zaire, but better for Jaren to become an all-star level player than Zaire to become like a decent starter. Like, if Zaire ever becomes an all-star, that's so far down the line that, you know, if you missed on Jaren at that point, you've created all kinds of other problems you got to deal with beyond Zaire, right? And well, so to me, it's Jaren all the way.
And then theoretically, like I think Zaire's their best chance to hit, but theoretically with all the other first-round assets or picks, like to me, there could be a future player that if they hit on, it could erase, provided, you know what I mean? Like if Zaire didn't pan out. To me, it's like you have to hit on one of them. It seems at this point your best case or your best chance maybe is to hit on Zaire because you traded up for him. He's a top 10 guy, and he'll probably be the highest of the draft picks. But it seems to me if they hit on one of the big assets that they got, that will, like, that's kind of what matters.
No, I agree. I mean, you know, they've created lots of paths for themselves, and they can afford to miss on multiple paths. They've already missed on one of Winslow. They could miss on one of Zaire. The Zaire thing is important, but it is not a deal breaker for your franchise future. The Jaren thing is sort of close to that. Like, missing on Jaren would cause some major disruptions to your planning. And so, to me, Jaren is, like, far and away the most important thing.
Chris, be safe on your drive back.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
That is Chris Harrington of the Daily Memphian. When we come back, Jeff has landed in Orlando. He's going to rejoin the program. Let's get into the National Football League. We do that next right here on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
How is your mental health? Billie Eilish, Kevin Love of the Cleveland Cavaliers, Imagine Dragons, Lil Nas X, and so many more feel the same pressures we do. They're joining our host, Carson Daly, for I'm Listening, September 23rd, starting at 6 p.m. right here. Carson and a cast of mental health experts, athletes, musicians, other notables, and you will share stories, insights, and help us all remember we are not alone. Talking about our mental health has the power to save lives. For more, visit imlistening.org.
Join us for I'm Listening, a two-hour special on Thursday, September 23rd from 6 to 8 p.m. on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Kind of a Jeff Calkins Show. And with actually Jeff Calkins. Thank you, Jeffrey. Well, I got myself moving down the road towards my next mission.
Did you take that gorgeous Southwest flight this morning?
I did, in fact.
Yeah,
I
took a couple of weeks
to Orlando.
I took that a couple of weeks ago when I went to that was what I took. That's a tough wake up.
Okay. So NFL.
Yeah.
Let's. I will say some things, and you tell me if that's overreaction or.
Well, Jeff, it's week one. There's no such thing.
If it's an overreaction, or if something was revealed yesterday, okay.
Right.
If we learned something real, or if it's an overreaction.
All right.
Okay. The Titans' offense is hideously overrated.
Oh boy. Okay, I think it's a hideous overreaction because
yes.
But I'm flagging it. You know what I mean? Like it's one of those ones that I still believe it's an overreaction because we've seen more data that suggests this is still a very good offense. And to me, it was the worst possible game script that you could have had for the Titans. They go 3-and-out to start. Now they weren't able to run the football with Derrick Henry. They give up a field goal. Then their next possession, they have
the touchdown. Yeah.
The strip sack that becomes the touchdown.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they find themselves down 10-0. I still have no idea who is.
Down 10-0 is nothing, though. Down 10-0 that early in the game isn't like, oh, we got to open it up. The problem with that game was Chandler Jones. I mean, in the end,
sure.
Right? And you don't face him every week. He had 19 sacks a couple of years ago. He may do that again. He may do that by week 3. That was unbelievable.
Well, the other big concern for me, the bigger concern was less the offense. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think the game got away from them, and then I have no idea what causes a kicker to put on a Titans jersey and officially be cursed forever. But it is certainly something to behold because, like,
in fairness, they had the kicker thing figured out. It's not like just they're idiots. And then the guy's, you know, he's on IR for the what is it, groin, hammy.
Yeah.
He's got a hammy. And so they got to bring in the substitute. So it's not just idiocy on the part of the Titans here. But, yes, that certainly didn't help at all.
I mean, the bigger concern for me is defense. I mean, you look at it, they allowed the second most explosive plays in week one, and they allowed the most explosive passes. Does that sound any different than last year?
Sounds a lot like last year. Sounds a lot like last year. How about this one then? Derrick Henry has finally hit the cliff.
Still gonna say overreaction. They loaded up to stop them, and then when they fell behind, they had to start throwing the football. And as you mentioned, Chandler Jones just absolutely wreaked havoc all day, every day. I still am at the point where I would bet on Derrick Henry, and I just, you know, it's now two consecutive games that we've seen where they haven't really been able to run the football because they didn't really run the football well against the Ravens in the playoff game. But I still think as the season goes on, he's still going to be one of the best, if not the best, running backs in the league. It's just, you know, they fell behind and they had to start throwing, and they got into a point where the, you know, the Cardinals defense just kind of pinned their ears back.
Okay, here's the next one. You were wrong about Justin Herbert. You ready to retract your wrong?
Absolutely not. I'm mad at Antonio Gibson.
31 out of 47, 337 yards. And on third down, except for that kneel down at the end, 13 of 17.
Jeff,
like,
he
that's
threw
clutch work right there. Clutch
Jeff,
work.
Jeff, we get into they're driving down to score, and he throws the back-breaking interception right there. And then Antonio Gibson, I would argue the knee was down, but the ball pops free, and they got the ball at the six. Like, he did everything that I wanted to. He also had another red – he was smart in that his two red zone turnovers, he made one of them into a fumble so it wouldn't count against his touchdown-to-interception ratio, but he did exactly what I wanted him to do. He, like, just – here it is, just a back-breaking interception, fourth quarter, team going into score, turtling. No one turned more pressures into sacks than him this weekend. I still feel good.
The league has figured out Josh Allen.
Oh, boy. Okay, so here's my concern, and you tell me what you think. The Bills have an issue in that where they're at their best throwing the football is on early downs. The Steelers took kind of a similar approach than to what the Chiefs did in the AFC title game. And the Bills just got away from running the football. I mean, Singletary.
They didn't get away from it. They didn't go to it to get away from it. All they did was do five receivers and four receivers the whole game, and you're exactly right. The reason early down coverage works, I mean, early down throwing works, is because they're girded to stop the run, you know? And that's why you throw on early downs. If they're playing every down like third down, you have to be able to run the freaking ball. And the truth of the matter is, for various reasons, their offensive line is kind of a mess. It's not just the running backs, but their offensive line is kind of a mess. I don't think they can run the ball.
Josh was under pressure the whole game.
He was under pressure the whole game. And it's interesting, we mentioned with fans, it might be different. I think he gets hyped up.
Gets too amped up.
Absolutely, wide open missed Emmanuel Sanders for would last year would have been a touchdown pass.
Yeah,
I mean, we'll see. I that game is not one that I think has exposed the Bills as a fraud, but it certainly was a dud of an effort, and I think raises some legit concerns.
A pretty good front you were going against.
It was, and the Bills' defense was like it certainly wasn't that impulse, you know. So it was, we'll see. They got the Dolphins. They have the Dolphins next week. If Washington wants to salvage their football season, they're going to have to sign Cam.
Ooh, boy. I don't
know. Obviously, this is because Ryan Fitzmagic is.
Yeah, this was
he's got
heartbreaking.
A subluxated hip.
Yeah, he got a lower version of the Tua injury.
Yeah,
it was. You got to admit, though, it is nice to see my boy Fitzmagic. Like, that's exactly what happens to an old guy. Like, he fell and hurt his hip.
When the hip goes,
yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, by the way, I'll take this one. They're not signing Cam. He's not freaking vaccinated. And this, by the way, is where it absolutely hurts him. Like, I don't know that they'd sign Cam anyway, but when you have a head coach who is immunocompromised and a cancer survivor, and you've got a quarterback who is not vaccinated, there is no freaking way.
Well, and further, he's the coach that let Cam go in Carolina.
Exactly. He could have picked up Cam any number of times since then, right? Like,
Cam has been available.
Cam has been available, and Washington has needed quarterbacks, right?
Yes.
And every single time, he's done something else. So I don't think there's any way. I don't think there's any way that happens. New Orleans has their quarterback.
I think so. Like, is it like at a certain point? What we've seen from the end of Drew Brees, I think Jameis might be an upgrade. Like, yes, the concern is always going to be turnovers. But as we mentioned, Jeff, consistently time and time again, reminder, Jameis got LASIK. And ever since Jameis has gotten LASIK, and he now can definitely tell the difference between his team and the other team, he's been nothing but efficient. And really, I thought the bigger story of yesterday is, I don't know if he can do it for a whole season, but Alvin Kamara as an actual just like straight up running back and just giving him the ball, feeding him, that was impressive. I mean, they had the highest success rate of plays yesterday. They were the best at establishing drives. And Jeff, you saw what they did. It was touchdown, touchdown. And all of a sudden, the other team has only touched the ball twice, and you're right at the end of the half.
No, that was amazing. Let's go to the other team. Aaron Rodgers has finally hit the cliff.
I'm not ready to say that. Like, I think it was the perfect game for them to, like, the Saints got everything the way that they wanted it. They get all the credit for it. They did it themselves. My bigger issue is with the Packers, Jeff, I don't know what they do on defense. They can't stop the run, and then they couldn't stop the pass. Like, if you're going to be in that situation, you're going to be asking Aaron Rodgers every single drive to basically keep you in it, and I don't know if they're built for that because, he was on his back foot the whole day, but, you know, this looks more like what we saw 2 years ago from Aaron Rodgers than what we saw last year. And I don't know if it's panic button time, but this could be, I believe Bill Barnwell wrote that the Packers were one of the teams that is poised for the massive, massive drop off. I think that might be closer to a reality.
Who did you have in the Super Bowl?
I believe I took Niners, and I think I did the Niners and Chiefs again.
I did Rams, Chiefs.
Well, you got to be feeling good.
I'm okay with that. Yeah, I'm okay with that. All right, you're not wrong on Justin Herbert. You were clearly wrong on Matt Stafford.
It's still early, but you do see what they wanted Stafford for, which is the big play shot. I do think, though, when you watch the course of the game, you know,
he didn't have to do much, honestly. That was I thought it was nice to be Matt Stafford last night.
Yeah.
Because they only had to score 16 points to win. You know, I mean, like, how often is he in that situation?
I think the bigger issue is that the Rams really struggled to run it. I know that the Bears have a good defense, but they shouldn't be struggling to run it like that when they were being as effective as they were on deep shots.
Right. I like them. I like them. I think, you know, I'm happy to stick with – I mean, right now the Bucs look maybe the best. Who looked the best in the NFC? I don't know where you're in the Cardinals. Are you taking the Cardinals for real? Do you take Kyler as an MVP candidate?
I still will believe in the Cardinals when I see it. However, there's no getting around. Like, they had one of the more impressive days. I thought the Seahawks looked good, but you always have to caveat September Russell Wilson is the most incredible quarterback to ever live.
Yeah, the Seahawks did that against, you know, whatever you see about Carson Wentz, who had decent numbers but was crappy.
Yes.
And weirdly enough, like, that's my sense of that game.
Yes,
is that
you nailed it.
But Indy's defense is good, and Seattle looked good against them, and now the Titans got Seattle next. Like, is this must-win for the Titans?
I mean, the division's still bad enough that you can say not must.
You can say
not must-win, but at a certain point, like, you can't fall too far behind.
Denver has their quarterback.
I actually thought, and I caveat everything with the Denver game yesterday because they're playing the Giants. But I think the Broncos might be good. Like, I want to see them against a team that I...
Miller got a couple of sacks again. You know, Teddy was efficient, 28 out of 36, 264 yards, two touchdowns.
They were the sixth best passing offense in expected points added. They were the fourth best rushing in expected points added. And they were the third best at establishing drives. Like, Teddy looked exactly like what they want. The one issue is, you know, how hurt is Judy?
Right. And they also, by the way, suddenly they're like wild and crazy. They're going for it.
Yeah, no, all of a sudden, like, they were going for it on every fourth down.
Every fourth down. It was crazy.
Teddy also did one of the meanest things I've ever seen. It was the fourth down play action pass, and the Giants rusher was coming after him, and like they both kind of stopped, and Teddy just kind of juked and like, there's no way you can come hit me. Like, he was daring him to come hit him, and they tried, and then he just got right around him, flipped it out to Fant, and Fant scored. And that was the play at which Judge tried to challenge a scoring play because he was upset, and he cost his team a timeout.
Mac Jones is the best Alabama quarterback in the NFL presently.
Jeff, what was the final score yesterday?
It slips my mind.
Yeah, it was 17-16, and Tua was on the other side. Which quarterback was able to get the first down to end the game, and which quarterback ended up doing nothing?
Tua. Right, that's because Brian Flores is a genius. He is now 3-2 against Bill Belichick, the only one of his disciples. Now, mind you, it helps that he comes along after Tom Brady's gone.
Jeff!
You know, like...
No, he's 3-2. End of story.
It helps that he comes along. Oh, he did so much better than the other disciples who had to play Belichick when he had Tom Brady.
I did think it was... I thought it was a beautiful, touching moment when Mac Jones... You know, remembering the history of the Patriots franchise, when he drew his first roughing the passer, which I'm just going to be sure of hundreds of roughing the passers throughout his 50-year NFL career that he'll have with the Patriots, it was nice that the guy went low and you got the Brady rule.
Did you come away from that persuaded by either quarterback?
I still think both can be good. I don't know if they're either is going to be like, you know, top five type quarterbacks. Tua had the one holy hell, what are you doing interception. I do think he was trying to just chunk it out of bounds, and then I think he got wrapped up and he couldn't do it. But Mac Jones looked exactly like Mac Jones looked to me like a better version of when Castle replaced Brady when he got hurt, and they went, you know, 11-5 there. But, you know, neither the concern with both teams, and I'm more open to the idea with Miami that it was the result of playing New England's defense and New England's secondary, but the concern with both teams is neither team is explosive.
Right. Urban Meyer's not going to – the Urban Meyer experience
he's gonna,
is not going to work.
He's going to have heart problems?
He's going to not make it through the year, yeah.
I think he's going to make it through the year because in the end, like, they do still have Trevor Lawrence. It was never going to be about this year to begin with. But, I mean, Jeff, they were, you know, against the team that most people thought was one of the worst teams coming into the season, that game was never competitive. And
it was stupid they were favored.
Oh, yes. Duh.
That was stupid. Well, why were they favored? I mean, you know.
Perception.
Like, what?
Perception.
That's totally perception. I mean, with all due respect, in the first game of Lawrence's career, you want Tyrod over Lawrence.
Yes.
There's no question, you know. I mean, Tyrod is a professional quarterback. Yeah, I think you're right. I think he makes it. I think he makes it through the year, and who knows? He may coach beyond that. But my God, that was atrocious. As that was one that they thought they might win. Although it's funny, if you're the Texans, like, do you want to be winning these games? You know, like, Texans could be just gritty enough.
Yeah.
Everyone hates us, whatever else, to screw up their draft pick.
Well, are the Texans going to be like year one of Flores with the Dolphins, where that roster's horrific and somehow, like, he wills them to, like, 5 wins?
Well, how about, like year one of the new regime in Buffalo, which got him into the playoffs.
Yeah.
Tyrod as quarterback, you know. That was, you look back at that was just absolutely extraordinary. The team that had, as we look at it now, look back at it now, if you put aside the disaster that was Houston's offseason because of the reasons it was,
yeah,
the team that had the worst offseason we know now was the Atlanta Falcons.
I think you have to buy that because, Jeff, they looked awful. I mean, they get into the red zone and they can't even get lined up right. They could not have stopped the Eagles. The Eagles literally did whatever they wanted. They ran it for like 6 yards a carry, which in the NFL is absurdly insane. And then Jalen Hurts looked like, you know, he he was back in his freshman year with Alabama talent, just chunking it all over the field. And, I mean, they had no answers. They tried to go man. They torched them on that. Then they'd go zone. They just ran it down their throat. I don't think the Eagles are. I don't think the Eagles are that good. I still think they're like a 6-7 win
team. It's interesting, though. I had heard an argument that the Eagles. I might have mentioned it, a couple weeks ago, that the Eagles are sneaky. If you take Carson Wentz, who led the team, as we pointed out before, led the league in sacks and interceptions, even though played four games fewer than anybody else. If you take those. It's like taking Jameis away from the Bucs.
Yeah.
Now, they didn't replace him with Brady, and that's the difference. But you're taking away so many negative plays that Carson Wentz was responsible for that the Eagles are better just because of that.
I can buy that argument. The thing that I still noticed yesterday is I don't know if Jalen Hurts is going to be able to scramble and get outside the pocket against most teams. Like the Falcons' defense was just so bad. They were on their heels the whole time, and they did not keep Hurts in the pocket very well at all, and he just killed them on stuff outside. I don't know if that's sustainable for a whole season, but if that is indeed what they're able to do, because I can also buy an argument, hey, he's able to get outside because they were so focused on trying to stop the run. He's able to get outside, and, they made enough plays on the outside that, they were certainly the most impressive NFC East team yesterday.
The reason that I think that Atlanta, that it looks bad, is that, there are awful teams. The Jets are a bad team. The Jags are a bad team. They're trying to be bad, or they're not, they understand that they are in the life cycle. They've embraced badness, young quarterback, whatever it is. Atlanta said, you know what, with Matt Ryan and Arthur Smith's brain and Matt Ryan's experience, we can be respectable and rebuild on the fly without ever getting bad, and we don't have to take one of these quarterbacks. So they could have taken Justin Fields.
Sure.
They could have taken Mac Jones, and instead they do that. The contract was a problem anyway for Matt Ryan, but that was they had a chance to move on and reset.
Yep.
And they said, we don't have to. And then they go out and lose the opener 32-6.
Yeah, and it was never even remotely competitive. The Eagles just whipped them from start to finish.
Any other things that stuck out to you from obviously the Kansas City game?
I was going to say, was that the most Cleveland loss that you could imagine?
Yes, that was the most Cleveland loss that you could imagine. It's funny, though, in retrospect, because I root against the greatness, and so therefore I root against the Chiefs. It's ridiculous that they have that tight end and that wide receiver with that quarterback and that head coach. It's ridiculous that they have that. I don't know how the hell they didn't win the Super Bowl last year, and they absolutely are going to win it again this year. But I root against greatness. But in the end, I'm kind of happy Cleveland lost, because – with my Bills losing, I need other AFC teams to lose. And so you got the Titans losing. And, that was critical. You got although I think they will still win the division, I guess. You got the Colts losing. You got the Browns losing. There's a lot of teams that were in that next bracket that lost games yesterday. So, and the Chiefs are clear class of that.
Chiefs, it's just amazing. Their first half was about as perfect a football as you could play. And,
it's funny, though. It was 22-10, I think, at half, and I'm like, yeah, no, they're not going to win. Did you, at the end of the half, I'm like, yeah, no, they didn't. That wasn't enough.
I thought when they got to 29, I was like, okay, as long as they just don't turn it over, they're going to win. But, I didn't expect the punter to just...
punter to friggin' drop the ball.
Yeah, and the thing that was weird on that was, when he was running, why didn't he just try to rugby style kick it? He was going to be able, he got outside enough to where he could have kicked it at least something. But once Mahomes found Tyreek for that big score, you're like, okay, well, we've seen this before.
Yeah. All right, we have to take a break. We'll take a break.
No, we're getting ready. We're getting out of here.
We're really?
Oh, yeah.
We're done?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, hell. Let me tell you, BP folks, then, that a Triumph Bank is my bank. And I didn't think there was a difference in banks, but there is. there is a bank where they still have personal service at a level where you know it's not just you sticking your card into the wall and getting your money and calling that your bank. It's actually having a banker who understands you, who supports you, whether you're a small business that needs a loan, whether you are someone who's refinancing. Triumph Bank is invested in the community, making banking easy for you. What's coming up next on 92.9?
Here's what's coming up next.
Jeff, we've got a loaded day here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Jason and John are going to be joined by Isaac Bruce at 11:25. Jason Fitz will also join them at 12:25. Mark and I will be in studio to recap the big weekend of football. GP back in studio. Jeff will join him at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. More tomorrow. We got to get out of here. Work is done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.